Welcome to Food Allergy and Your Kiddo. I am your host, Dr. Alice Hoyt. Delighted to be joined today by Dr. Dave Stukas, one of the most amazing allergists who hosts the Quad AIs podcast, who does amazing things for kiddos with food allergies, and is here today. Again, he is no stranger to this show, here today to talk about something very exciting in the world of food allergy. And I am delighted to have you on, Dave. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back. This is very exciting. Like, this is once in a generation conversation we're going to have. So I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Well, I am very happy that it is with you. And I thought you would be the perfect person to discuss this with because you're the real deal and you talk things through with people. And what we're talking about today, drum roll please, is Xolair or omalizumab being approved by the FDA for use in single or multi-food allergy in people 1 year of age and older. Ta-da! Very exciting. Very exciting. So yeah, first of all, what did you think about it getting approved?
It caught me off guard. I mean, we kind of knew it was coming because there were rumblings, and we knew that the company put forward for a FDA approval process, and the FDA fast tracked it. But I didn't think it was going to happen this fast. And it happened right in conjunction with our big American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology annual meeting. So it was just a week before. So the timing was absolutely perfect because all of us got to convene together in Washington D.C. and learn even more.
Yeah, that was very cool. That was very cool. I did feel bad for the other sessions going on when this session went on, which was actually a session that I wanted to go to as well. But I wasn't going to not go to this session. I almost felt like, when I was a fellow is when, Dr. Gideon Lack presented at the Academy meeting, the LEAP study.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember sitting there. And texting actually Pam, who's the co-host of this podcast. She's not with us today. She's on the show today. She's still with us. But I remember texting her about it. And just thinking back to that moment, like there are not a lot of moments like that where you're, you dedicate your life to professionally. You see something that is going to impact the lives of your patients in such a good way that you just can't help but to get just like excited about it.
Oh yeah. No, it's like a nerd convention / rock and roll show all combined into one. It's very exciting.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So let's start from the beginning. What is Xolair?
Yeah. So Xolair is a treatment, a medicine that's been around for over 20 years. We've used it for, allergic asthma and chronic hives and chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps. And what this medication does, it's known as a biologic, where it when it's injected into the body, it binds something called IgE. And IgE is the allergy antibody. So when this first came to market over 20 years ago, people, said to me, I think just starting my fellowship at the time, and they said, why are you going into allergy and immunology? This medication is going to put you out of business. Well, we still have a job. but it is a wonderful treatment for specific conditions.
Yeah, no. So listeners, if you're not on the email list for Food Allergy and Your Kiddo, sign up for our email list, because when this first came out, I sent out an email just very like high level overviewing what Xolair is. And one of the first things you just said, Dave, and one of the things that I made sure that I included when I was doing my little overview newsletter was that this is not a new medication. And I think I know that for me as an allergist, and the wife of a wonderful man who has an IgE-mediated peanut allergy and would qualify for this medication, being that this medication has been around for 20 years makes me feel really good.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're not, I mean, you never expect surprises, right? But it's been around for a long time, and it's a pretty safe drug.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we know how to use it. We're familiar with the administration of it. We're familiar with teaching how to people how to self-administer, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, the track record on this is, you know, it's almost unparalleled compared to some of the other treatments that come around the corner for the conditions that you and I treat.
So talk a little bit about how Xolair works, or omalizumab, the long name for it. Talk a little bit about how it works and how it's going to help kiddos and adults not have anaphylaxis if they accidentally eat their allergen.
Yeah. So when people receive this treatment, it blocks, it sort of combines with their IgE antibodies. And IgE is the allergy antibody. When people form specific IgE against different allergens, that's what causes their symptoms when they're exposed to it in real life. So if you have IgE against dog dander and you're around a dog, it binds to the IgE, it unlocks the allergy cells, makes you itchy, sneezy, stuffy, wheezy, that sort of thing. For those with food allergy, if you eat the allergen that you're allergic to, then as it goes through your body and you digest it, the protein gets exposed to the IgE on your allergy cells. So if you have peanut allergy, the peanut binds to the IgE, unlocks the allergy cells, and that's when you get the cascade that causes the allergic reaction. So when omalizumab is used for treatment, it sort of blocks up that IgE, which prevents the peanut from binding to it, which is pretty cool. So it's like the best blocker of all time, right? So even if you eat the peanut, it won't cause as severe of an allergic reaction, theoretically. And the other thing that it can do is it can also increase the amount of peanut you would need to eat to cause an allergic reaction. So there's sort of that twofold effect that you can get from that. And that's what the initial study showed.
Yeah, and talk about, or what I was pretty impressed with regarding the study, was how they really, it was an intense study for these families who participated in this study. Talk a little bit about the families, the kiddos that were in the study and the ingestion challenges and such that they had to go through.
Yeah, so here's the thing with this treatment, and this is going to be a bit of a curveball for folks. The only way you know it works is by eating the food. So once you start treatment with Xolair, skin tests and serum IgE, the blood tests, no longer matter because you're blocking up that IgE. So they're irrelevant once you start treatment with it. So you can't use those as a marker to figure out if you're actually, you know, no longer allergic or tolerant or anything like that. So what this study design did was they, at enrollment, they took everybody who enrolled and they gave them what they were allergic to. And everybody had to have peanut and at least two other food allergies like egg and milk and cashew and wheat and things like that. So they gave them really small amounts and they wanted to identify those that were exquisitely sensitive to very small amounts. So like only 30% of those who, you know, wanted to participate in the trial actually qualified because they were that allergic to small amounts. And we're talking like 1/3 of 1 peanut kernel. That's what these people ate at the beginning. Then they got treated with omalizumab for 4 to 5 months. They underwent the challenge again. And what they wanted to see was what's the percentage of people who could increase the amount of peanut they could tolerate to cause an allergic reaction. And they found that about 2/3, for almost all the foods except for cashew, which we'll talk about in a second, were able to significantly increase the amount that they had to eat to cause an allergic reaction. So it kind of gave them that bite-proof protection that they wanted. For peanut, they went from 100 to 600 milligrams. So 1/3 of a peanut that caused a reaction before, now they could eat at least 2 peanuts, sometimes even higher.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. I love that. And yeah, that's a lot for families because... Well, and it's a lot that those families went through these challenges because these weren't kiddos who were allergic to one food. In order to qualify for the study, you had to be allergic to peanut plus at least 2 other foods. And so they had to do challenges for all of these, which is amazing. And, you know, just God bless these families for doing it and the doctors as well, you know, and the study staff that you're going through this and you know you're giving something that could potentially trigger an allergic reaction. It also highlights the safety, I would say, of ingestion challenges when done correctly. And we weren't really going to talk about ingestion challenges, but let's have a little like tangent for a minute about the safety of doing an ingestion challenge when it's done with an allergist who does ingestion challenges, which we're all trained to do ingestion challenges, right? But stop for a second, because I know you do a lot of challenges, and talk a little bit about the safety of doing an ingestion challenge.
Yeah. So oral food challenges are, it's the gold standard for diagnosing food allergy or assessing allergic potential. At our center, we do about 1,000 oral food challenges a year, all ages, all foods. Nice. Very few of them have negative allergy testing. I'll pause for dramatic effect. So if we're waiting for negative testing, we're missing years of opportunity where people can eat a food that they're, you know, sensitized but tolerant to. And it's the most empowering thing that I do. So when no symptoms occur and somebody eats a serving or so of their food, they're no longer allergic. Game changer. That changes their life. Even when symptoms do occur, it gives families very important information. How much did they need to eat to cause an allergic reaction? What were the symptoms that occurred? For adolescents especially, who may not have had an allergic reaction in over a decade, now they know what it feels like. So as they're starting more, you know, self-management or going off to college, they know what their body feels like if they're having an allergic reaction, and they know exactly when to use, you know, proper medication and things like that. So these are the most empowering things that we offer. But they're hard to do because it takes half of a day, and you have to have the right setup in regards to your clinic staff and the rooming, and you have to have all the medications available just in case. We have an entire kitchen stocked with vehicles and foods and things like that. But thanks for mentioning that, because I agree. Mm-hmm. That's what this study showed and others. Like, a lot of people think, oh my gosh, if you're going to go to a food challenge, if a reaction occurs, that automatically means you're going to have a severe life-threatening allergic reaction. Like, those dots don't connect. Like, that's, we're trying to prevent right. that. And there's right. a reason that we kind of go slowly and we're there the whole time. It's a very safe way to kind of manage this.
Excellent. I love that. I love that we took that little tangent. We tangent a lot on this show. We're trying to limit the tangents, though. Stay focused. Back to Xolair. And so the families did multiple challenges. And talk a little bit first talk a little bit about who you expect to use this for, and like describe the types of patients, because it's not for everybody, right? Because it's mm-hmm. an injection at least once a month, depending on your total IgE and your weight. But talk a little bit about who you're going to use this for, and then talk a little bit about combining this with oral immunotherapy.
Yeah. So a couple things to consider. As you mentioned, it's an injection. The first three injections will likely have to be given at an allergist's office due to a very, very small risk of allergic reaction to the treatment. How can you have an allergic reaction to a treatment that treats allergic reactions? We have no idea, but it's very, very rare.
I literally had this conversation about 30 minutes ago.
So crazy. Yeah. So three office visits, first one 2 hours, then 2 30 minutes, and then you can teach you how to do this at home. Treatment's going to be essentially for years or lifelong, although I'm sure we'll learn a lot more in the future as far as spacing out dosing or, you know, who knows what. But as of right now, it's a long-term treatment. You're not getting one injection. You're getting treated long-term. The injections are going to be every 2 or every 4 weeks. Each treatment dose, and there could be multiple injections based upon the dosing that you get, which is based upon your weight and your total IgE level. So some people might be getting 3 shots every 2 weeks, depending upon things. Others may be getting 1 shot every 4 weeks. So these are things mm-hmm. to consider, especially for younger children. The cost. So each treatment is going to be roughly, you know, $2,000 to $3,000. We have no idea what the insurance landscape is going to look like for this. You know, we often have, you know, success getting it covered for allergic asthma. If we can keep people out of the emergency room in the hospital, insurance companies love paying for that. Mm-hmm. So we have to learn all this together. So a lot of this is going to be determined. As far as who is ideal, so mm-hmm. I've been preaching this for the last couple of weeks since the announcement came. If somebody's going to prescribe Xolair to treat food allergy, you better damn well be sure that that person actually has an IgE-mediated food allergy, because a lot of people are misdiagnosed as having food allergy that they actually don't have. And there's a whole host of reasons for this. I mean, you've talked about this on your podcast before. There's panel testing. There's poor interpretation of IgE results. There's a whole host of things. So clarify the diagnosis. Do you actually have a legitimate IgE food allergy? Other than that, it's approved. The way the approval is written, anybody with food allergy down to the age of 1 year of age is eligible to be treated with this. Now, who are going to be optimal candidates? I think there's going to be a couple of no-brainers. So the cool thing about Xolair is it doesn't care what you're allergic to. So if you have people with multiple food allergies who may not be amenable to, you know, treatment with oral immunotherapy and things like that, that's an ideal treatment because we can protect you against all of them. If you have somebody who has a history of anaphylaxis or severe reactions to very small amounts of the food, Xolair seems like it's going to be a great option because it's not going to expose you to that food. It's going to protect you. If you have somebody who has comorbid conditions such as allergic asthma, environmental allergies, and they have, you know, food allergy or multiple food allergies, this could be a no-brainer because it's going to treat all of those symptoms and conditions and make you feel better. I think for adolescents, especially those heading off to college, this is going to be a wonderful treatment option just to kind of protect them against, you know, accidental ingestion. Now, I think we need to pause here and make sure everybody understands that Xolair doesn't cure food allergy. It doesn't allow you to start eating your food allergen whenever you want, however much you want. It doesn't allow you to get rid of your epinephrine. It is to be used in combination with all of the avoidance strategies that people typically use. So that's another caveat as well. I'll kind of pause there if you want to inject anything that we can talk about OIT next.
No, I think you raise all the good points. The only other thing that I think about are patients with shellfish allergies who it does limit their life, where they'll go to dinner, all these different things, even if there are safe options, or will they go to a crawfish boil and all. And even though they're not going to eat it, like a lot of times they just don't feel comfortable. Yep. And this type of medication can certainly help that, especially since doing oral immunotherapy or sublingual immunotherapy to shellfish is just not something that we very routinely do for a host of reasons. But I agree with you with sort of like who you're thinking this drug could work very well for. And I think I just want to really underscore our asthmatic patients. I know that when I'm starting a kiddo on oral immunotherapy, before I start a kiddo on oral immunotherapy, I really try to dive into the asthma history because I do not like any sort of surprises that involve the airway regarding a kiddo, having an asthma exacerbation. And with oral immunotherapy, just the risk of having inflamed airways, and then if you do react to your OIT, having a worse reaction than if you had asthma that was well controlled. And so for Xolair, which has been approved, the initial approval for Xolair was for asthma. So to have a drug like this that now we can use not just for asthma, but also for food allergy patients, it's very empowering. I feel like, you know, the discussion that we're having today is very different than the discussion that we would be having about food allergy management strategies even a year now, a year ago, definitely 5 years ago, right? And so I definitely think that the added tool of Xolair is very empowering for really any food allergy at this point, which is fantastic.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. And you know what? We've spent our whole careers, I mean, the last 100 years, putting Band-Aids on things, right? We're treating one condition, we're treating the next condition, we're treating this condition. We can actually now treat an individual. We can treat it, the entire system, right? We can sort of block that allergic cascade, which impacts all of those conditions that we've been talking about. And that's just huge. It's a game changer.
Yeah, it really is. So now so the name of the study is the Outmatch study. But talk a little bit now about OIT.
So that's phase two of the study.
Yeah.
So phase one of the study was you take a bunch of children and adults with food allergy, baseline food challenges. We talked about, treat them and then repeat the challenge. They showed that, you know, 2/3 could increase the amount that, you know, caused an allergic reaction. So that looks really good. That's what got the approval. Phase two is now combining this treatment with oral immunotherapy, specifically multiple food oral immunotherapy. And the reason why they're studying this is because with oral immunotherapy, as I know you've talked about and you know, your audience knows, but, you know, this is traditionally one food at a time where you are intentionally eating very small amounts of that food every single day, increasing your dose every couple of weeks until you reach a maintenance dose. And then you're taking that for years and years and years, potentially lifelong. Over time, this can desensitize you and also increase your threshold for causing allergic reaction. What's the trade-off with OIT? This is now part of your daily life. Every single dose that you get could cause an allergic reaction. We try to lower that reaction by, you know, taking, you know, no exercise for 2 hours afterwards, having a full stomach. It is, you know, onboarding people, making sure there's good communication, things like that. But reactions do occur. And then with OIT, traditionally it's one food at a time, just because we want to be safe. This is the long game. We're not rushing anybody through to get to maintenance here. This is a long-term treatment option. So some families love it, and they can, you know, incorporate this into their daily regimen, and their kids do great. Other families, it's the worst thing they ever did, because every time their child sneezes, they think that they're having a reaction to their treatment, or they don't tolerate it because of their asthma or atopic dermatitis. Or for those with multiple food allergies, it's just not feasible to undergo OIT for all these different foods. So with omalizumab, what it's going to hopefully do, we don't have good evidence yet, there's some, is that it should make OIT safer. So if you can bind up that IgE, then we can put somebody on oral immunotherapy, maybe even updose them faster or combine multiple foods at the outset so they better tolerate their treatment. And then long-term, what happens with the OIT is that sort of then desensitizes them and changes their threshold. And then potentially they can stop their omalizumab once they reach their maintenance dose. So yet to be determined exactly how we're going to do this, but probably combining the two for a period of time is likely how it's going to go. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
Now that I am excited at the thought of being able to apply Xolair to some of my, I do multi-food OIT, and inevitably it's kiddos who have numbers in, you know, greater than 100 to egg and milk. And then there's some cashew in there, which we need to go back to cashew. But I agree with you that having a tool that can help decrease the risk of having reactions to your treatment that can make treatment safer. It is going to be game changing for some of these families. So let's go back to cashew. Let's talk a little bit about cashew. A little bit about cashew in general. We're going to take a little tangent here for just a moment, because I feel like cashew is really like this like stealthy, sneaky little allergen that none of us is allergists like, but it doesn't get the glory that peanut gets.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Yeah. So cashew is classified as a tree nut. It has a lot of cross-sensitization with pistachio. So there's a lot of individuals out there that when they're allergic to cashews, they have the same reaction to pistachio and vice versa. But it's also very different than things like almonds, walnuts, pecans, hazelnut, macadamia, other tree nuts and things like that. But yeah, cashew is the one that's been sort of associated with more frequent causes of allergy amongst all the tree nuts, as well as more severe allergic reactions. And what they found in the outmatch trial for omalizumab was cashew sort of behaved a little differently than the other foods. And they didn't see the same percentage of participants be able to increase their threshold dose to cashew as they saw with the others. I think for the other foods, it was 2/3 could increase it. And then for cashew, it was around 40% or something like that. Reasons we don't fully understand why. There's, when you look back at this, there was, you know, relatively, it wasn't a robust number of patients. It's not like they had 10,000 people eating cashew and, you know, it being treated with omalizumab. So we have to learn some more. But I think if anything, it's more of a cautionary tale that, you know, this treatment, it's not curing people of their allergy. It's not letting you eat whatever you want. It's, you know, it's likely increasing the threshold for most people who get treatment. But, you know, we don't want people experimenting on their own and seeing what they can tolerate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it also underscores that all allergens are created differently. Mm-hmm. And just inevitably, sometimes these cashew numbers, even relatively low numbers, you do a challenge hoping that it's going to be negative, but it inevitably is positive. And just that's just how cashew is for whatever reason. And I think that's kind of supported in the outmatch study too, is that it's just one that's just... even lowish numbers doesn't matter, that if somebody has a cashew allergy, it is that cashew specific IG is just waiting to bind it and just activates those mast cells like very robustly, to say the least. That's sort of what I got out of it too. So thank you. Thank you for taking this tangent into cashew allergy land. Very important. Very important. No, I think the outmatch study, it was well done. There weren't a whole lot of people in it, though, relative to some other studies. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, part of it goes into the stringent inclusion criteria. So we sort of touched upon, you had to have people react to really, really small amounts of the food protein. I think they had multiple foods. Yeah. So 470 or so tried to participate, but only 160 or so actually made it in, or 180 perhaps. So that means, you know, What is that? That's 3/4 of folks just simply weren't that reactive, which also is reassuring for the general population out there with food allergy of like, for most of you, you're going to have to eat more than trace amounts to cause a reaction, let alone a severe allergic reaction. And that's what these studies show. So it was a very involved study. Oh, by the way, there was something called the COVID-19 pandemic that occurred right in the middle of it. So that affected recruitment as well. But I think looking at the results, they're good, and they sort of echo what we thought we were going to find, which you always like to see, because it makes sense. And it goes back to the track record we have with this medication, that we know what it does. We know how safe it is. So it's nice to see, and we're going to see even more data coming out of this group over the next couple of years as well.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that the data was as strong as it was. Absolutely. And yeah, there's definitely patients that I've already talked with some of their families about, you know what, this might be a good addition to the current OIT regimen. And one of the first things families say, or when I first start talking about it, I get sometimes that look in the eye of like excitement. They're like, we could travel.
Yeah.
You know, they're just because they've wanted to go to Europe or wherever that speaks a different language, or just being out of their comfort zone, really. And they're still going to avoid the food, but they feel better about it. And that to me is just so amazing to be able to improve someone's quality of life that much and decrease the level of anxiety is huge for some of these kiddos.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's a great example. If you're traveling internationally, you can dose them for a few months before they go. They don't have to worry about it. That's very different than, you know, not being treated. Or if you take that same patient and they're on OIT, trying to manage OIT while you travel internationally with everything that's mm-hmm. going on, that can be a nightmare in certain scenarios. Absolutely. So yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. Now, well, look, Dave, thank you so much for coming on and talking about Xolair and Outmatch. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want food allergy families to really know?
No, this is a long conversation with your allergist. You're going to get different opinions on this. It's a moving target. We're all learning as we go. I'm glad that we had the chance to discuss this very early in the process, but I would love to revisit this a year from now. You know, we're going to, you know, hopefully learn even more. I know at our center, we're going to, you know, have a registry. So everybody who starts it, we need to follow this as a community, a long-term outcome, see what happens to these individuals mm-hmm. after we start treatment and things like that. So this story is not finished yet, I promise you.
This is the beginning of this chapter. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. And you know, I will ask you to come back in a year, if not sooner, to talk more about this and other amazing things going on in the world of food allergy. So thank you so much for taking time out of your, I know, very busy schedule to come on the show and talk with families about food allergies and Xolair.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Remember, I'm an allergist, but I'm not your allergist. So talk with your allergist about what you learned today. Like, subscribe, share this with your friends, and go to foodallergyandyourkiddo.com where you can join our newsletter. God bless you, and God bless your family.